welcome to a belated beginning of Lent, post-snow day last week. For some of us, this is the season of contemplative reconnection with the divine that we just love and long for each year. For some of us, this season sends us into a tailspin, reminding us of awful Sundays from childhood when we weren't allowed to play. For others of us, we don't even know really what that Lent word means. So here's one version. This year at Lindale, we're going to be attempting to follow in the footsteps of Jesus in the wilderness, with special attention to his relationship to resistance and resisting the abuses of power the devil tempted him with. And we're going to be paying particular attention to what he sought instead, which is healing justice. Healing justice is a pretty recent term, or a melding of terms, that comes out of predominantly queer, feminist, and people of color-led movement spaces, but it's nothing new. It's a return to the ancient spiritual practices that refuse to separate healing work from justice work. I don't think Jesus could have separated healing from justice if he tried. Hence, all the healing stories of the Gospels that are also justice stories. We'll be spending time with some of those throughout the following weeks. But let me tell you first how I understand healing justice in the modern way of talking about it. Healing justice means three movements. This is the first one. The first one is interrupting violence. Physical violence, spiritual violence, political violence, systemic violence, emotional violence. The first step of healing justice is interrupting violence. Second, healing justice is about healing from that violence and making room and time to do that healing work, because it is work individually and collectively. And third, healing justice means transforming the conditions that led to the violence in the first place. So interrupting violence, making space to heal from violence, both for those who experienced the violence and those who perpetrated the violence. And finally, to transform the conditions that created the violence in the first place. This isn't linear. It's not a stairmaster of healing justice. We can be working through these steps all at once if we are conscious enough. But let me tell you a story or two to help you see it more clearly. I had been visiting Pam, we'll call her Pam, as her chaplain in a nursing home on the Upper West Side of Manhattan for a few weeks. She was a patient in rehab recovering from a fall. She was in her 70s with long white hair that was always elegantly tied back perfectly, which I think was a form of dignity when you're stuck in a hospital gown for weeks. My job was to visit all the new Christian patients in the nursing home and orient them to the religious services available during their stay. And I would go back to see patients again if they requested ongoing support. Pam was relatively healthy and on track for a shorter stay, but loneliness and longing were palpable in her being. So I stopped by on my rounds to hear the next chapter of her life story whenever I could. She was a fascinating, wise soul. Then one day, I showed up in my clergy collar. It was the first time I had ever worn one. My supervisor had challenged me to embody my authority, as she called it, she was feeling fancy, in new ways, and I felt entirely queasy about it. Clergy collar. Isn't that for the old white dudes in the Catholic Church? Isn't that the kind of religious authority that turns out to kind of lead to abusive situations? Isn't that the kind of power trip Jesus is telling us in our scripture to resist? I did it. I trusted my supervisor. She was smart and she was a rabbi, which somehow made a difference in my mind. When I walked in with the collar on, Pam chuckled. It was a nervous chuckle. I asked her what she thought of the collar, and she said she didn't like it and asked why I was wearing it. I let her in on the secret that it was an experiment. I was seeing what it was like to wear it in the nursing home and how it changed my interactions with people, for better or for worse. And then I asked her why she didn't like it. And the stories poured out. Her father had abused her in every way imaginable. The collar reminded her of her father's Christianity, one that served as a mask of goodness to the outside world during the same time he was abusing her. I was heartsick. Here I was, a religious authority she actually trusted, and I felt like I had ruined it. I was wearing the symbol of her oppression and her pain. But then I had an idea, or spirit moved, or both. I asked Pam if she'd like me to take off the collar. And while she resisted with her words, her whole body seemed to relax at the idea. And so I just took it off. And she laughed, more than a nervous chuckle. "It's just a piece of plastic," she said. "Yep." And I handed it to her to inspect. We both had some smiles and some tears. I didn't have the opportunity to stop the violence of her father's abuse directly. But our meeting was a time for healing from that violence. She got to hold the collar in her hands and recognize that it was indeed just a piece of plastic, that her father's authority was not ultimate but man-made and flimsy, that her resilience was equally, if not more, powerful. She also became a teacher to me about how I must transform the future of religious leadership and church so that religion can no longer be a mask for an abuser to hide behind. This is healing justice. Another story. "This clergy collar has always been an act of resistance," wrote my friend Reverend Hannah on Facebook the other day. "I put it on that night I first went to the Waller County Jail so they would know who sent us. I have worn my collar most days since then. It has both saved my life and put it at risk." Lovely Lindell, you know the jail that she's talking about. It's the jail where Sandra Bland died in police custody after having been pulled over for a ticket while driving and while being black. Reverend Hannah is a young, white, blonde Southern pastor who was serving a church about 50 miles away from where Sandra Bland was killed when it happened. She spent the next year camped outside of Waller County Jail, demanding answers, supporting Sandra's family and friends, and enduring 100-degree heat in the sun after the county cut down all the trees surrounding the jail in hopes that it would make her and her team leave. She couldn't stop the violence directly, but she could weep healing tears with Sandra's family, share countless videos of Sandra's life on a big social media platform, and put her white body and white collar in the face of sheriffs day after day, trying to hold the system accountable so there wouldn't be another death like Sandra's. This, too, is healing justice. Now, I tell you these stories not to limit your vision of who can follow in Jesus' footsteps towards healing justice to those of us with collar options, clergy, but to share with you the vast array of what healing justice means for all of us. We can move towards healing justice in a one-to-one conversation in which a little more healing happens, like what happened with Pam. And healing justice can happen outside jails, where tears of grief intermingle with demands for justice, like what happened with Reverend Hannah. And healing justice can happen at any scale in between. What matters is that we refuse to separate our hearts and our bodies' needs for healing from our work for justice. Now, the reason both these examples are centered around the clergy collar is also that wearing the clergy collar is going to be my spiritual discipline for the season of Lent. I like to add a practice for the season of Lent instead of taking something away, as the tradition usually goes. For me, adding something feels more empowering, but you can do either. The point isn't what you do. The point is if it draws you closer to the healing justice God is bringing about in the world, if it draws you closer to the divine in yourself and in others, if it challenges you in some way to step out of the ordinary patterns of your life. For me, the collar is definitely all of this. From the first day I wore it back with Pam, I recognized that it changed how people interacted with me, for better and for worse, but always in ways that were meaningful and challenged me. You all know this collar primarily as my protest collar. I wear it most often at protests to make my clergy presence known when it matters, especially at things like pride parades, where it can be a startlingly healing accompaniment to a rainbow feather boa. But what will happen when I meet one of you for coffee at Common Roots and I'm wearing the collar? What random conversation might I have with a stranger because I'm wearing it? I have no idea. I'm sure this would make me uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable just thinking about it. It's an outing of sorts. There's no hiding my clerginess, which is something I want to do regularly, especially as a white Christian, especially as white Christian supremacy rages. But it will also force me to confront the piece of identity I share with those extremists. Following Jesus to resist abuses of power. Now, of course, if for you too, like Pam, the collar is triggering, I will take it off. It's a piece of plastic. It's a symbol of power, not actual power. I think of it more along the lines of drag, as in queens. Drag is meant to exaggerate traditional understandings of gender, and in doing so, denaturalize our relationship to it. In other words, it's supposed to make us see gender differently, often with humor and joy and excessive glitter, so we can have a more conscious relationship with gender. I wear my collar similarly, to make clergy power visible in ways that make us pause, maybe laugh, and ultimately have a more conscious relationship to it. Hence, my nails. Have you noticed my clergy nails? They have clergy collars on them. It's supposed to be funny. It's okay to laugh. And then there is another dimension of why I'm wearing the collar this month. As a young queer woman, I have literally been asked while wearing a collar if it's a costume. So resistant are some brains to seeing me as a pastor. On my body, the collar is a form of resistance to misogyny and heterosexism. It's a statement for me, as Reverend Hannah said, of who sent me. It is a part of the healing I need these days and a part of the justice I seek these days. So, as we dive into this season of Lent, I have some questions for you. What healing do you need? What justice do you seek? Where does your healing meet that justice? What practices can you play with this season to help you remember that you are made gloriously in the image of God? And no other power can heighten or diminish your power from God. I don't know the answers for you, but I pray that you have the strength to live these questions this season of wilderness wandering. May it be so. Amen.